Harper Audio presents The Duke Is Mine by Eloisa James. Performed by Susan Duerden. Prologue. Once upon a time, not so very long ago, or to be exact, March 1812, there was a girl who was destined to be a princess, though to be absolutely precise, there was no prince in the offing. But she was betrothed to a duke's heir, and from the point of view of minor gentry, a coronet was as good as a crown. This story begins with that girl, and continues through a stormy night and a series of tests, and if there's no P in the tale, all I can say is that if you read on, you will encounter a surprise in that bed. A key, a flea, or perhaps a marquis for that matter. In fairy tales, the ability to perceive an obtrusion as tiny as a pea under the mattress is enough to prove that a strange girl who arrives on a stormy night is indeed a princess. In the real world, of course, it's a bit more complicated. In order to prepare for the rank of Duchess, Miss Olivia Mayfield Lytton had learned something from virtually every branch of human knowledge. She was prepared to dine with a king, or a fool, or Socrates himself, conversing on subjects as far-flung as Italian comic opera and the new spinning machines. But just as a single dried pea was all that was needed to determine the authenticity of the princess, one crucial fact determined Olivia's eligibility for the rank of Duchess. She was betrothed to the heir to the Cantorwick dukedom. Less important were the facts that when this tale begins, Olivia was 23 and still unmarried, that her father had no title, and that she had never been given a compliment such as a diamond of the first water. Quite the opposite, in fact. None of that mattered. Chapter 1, in which we are introduced to a future duchess. 41 Clarges Street, Mayfair, London. The residence of Mr. Lytton, Esquire. Most betrothals spring from one of two fierce emotions, greed or love. But Olivia Lytton's was fueled neither by an exchange of assets between like-minded aristocrats, nor by a potent mixture of desire, propinquity, and Cupid's arrows. In fact, the bride-to-be was liable, in moments of despair, to attribute her engagement to a curse. "Perhaps our parents forgot to ask a powerful fairy to my christening," she told her sister Georgiana, on their way home from a ball given by the Earl of Micklethwaite, at which Olivia had spent generous swathes of time with her betrothed. "The curse, it hardly needs to be said, is Rupert's hand in marriage. I would rather sleep for 100 years." "Sleeping has its attractions," her sister agreed, descending from their parents' carriage before the house. Georgiana did not pair the positive comment with its opposite. Sleep had attractions, but Rupert had few. Olivia actually had to swallow hard and sit in the dark carriage by herself a moment before she was able to pull herself together and follow her sister. She had always known that she would be Duchess of Cantorwick some day, so it made no sense to feel so keenly miserable. But there it was. An evening spent with her future husband made her feel half-cracked. It didn't help that most of London, her mother included, considered her the luckiest of young women. Her mother would be horrified, though unsurprised, by Olivia's lame jest linking the dukedom with a curse. To her parents, it was manifestly clear that their daughter's ascension of the social ranks was a piece of singular good fortune. In short, a blessing.
"Thank God," Mr. Lytton had said, 5,000 times since Olivia was born. "If I hadn't gone to Eton..."
It was a story that Olivia and her twin sister Georgiana had loved when they were little. They would perch on their papa's knees and listen to the thrilling tale of how he, plain, unremarkable, albeit connected to an earl on one side, as well as a bishop and a marquis on the other, Mr. Lytton, had gone to Eton and become best friends with the Duke of Cantorwick, who had inherited his grand title at the tender age of 5. At some point, the boys had sworn a blood oath that Mr. Lytton's eldest daughter would become a duchess by marrying the Duke of Cantwick's eldest son. Mr. Lytton showed giddy enthusiasm in doing his part to ensure this eventuality, producing not one, but two daughters within a year of marriage. The Duke of Cantwick, for his part, produced only one son, and that after a few years of marriage, but obviously one son was sufficient for the task at hand.